Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Daddy-O podcast. I'm your host, Rob Burnett, and along with my co-host, Brad Bickerton, we're exploring modern fatherhood and how it blends with business leadership. Both Brad and I are new fathers, and we both run businesses. On this podcast, you'll hear about our parenting journeys, as well as from parenting experts, CEOs, and other business leaders. We're going to dive deep on being dads, business lessons, and the balance of work and fatherhood. We hope you'll join us on this journey. Please enjoy the show. Hey, everyone. Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Rob Burnett.
And I'm Brad Bickerton.
On today's episode, we're going to talk about sick kids, having to leave work because your baby's crying. We've got an amazing interview today with Otis Grigsby. Otis is a former NFL player, lawyer, and now multiple-time entrepreneur, startup person. It's a great interview. Definitely stay tuned. You won't want to miss it. And then stay tuned to the end after the interview. Brad and I are going to go through our wins and fails for the week. Brad, good to have you here. What's the update on Theo and business and in your life?
Lots to say this week. It's really fun. I think the first two shout outs are our nanny created for me the first Daddy-O swag. I'm wearing a hat right now for the YouTube people that she just very much by hand just stitched Daddy-O into a blue cap, and she knows that I like blue, and I just felt really seen for my birthday. So that was pretty darn cool. And the second thing is that in the Steve Lepper interview, you can tell that we recorded at different times because of where I held the mic. And I was whinging about this with Sarah Beth. She goes, well, buy a mic boom. I'm like, I don't know. And so I bought a mic boom. It's amazing. It's helping with my coaching clients. It's just this great thing. And its sum total cost was $12.95. So sometimes we just need to get out of our way and just go buy the thing. So the real win loss struggle last week was Theodore both had his first cold and was top teething. And for teething, for anyone who doesn't know, it's called cutting your teeth because your teeth are literally cutting through your gums. Ooh. And so we'll get to my wins and fails with that. But man, is that a rough time in the family when baby is confused, crying, looking for help everywhere, not sleeping right, everything's off, and the family's just literally shoulders hunched, arms down, going through the motions of life because the chop wood carry water that we normally add into parenting is now like triple, plus where our capacities are being drawn down from lack of sleep and everything. And so with all my clients last week, I got to start by telling them, hey, baby's sick and cutting his teeth. And they go, oh, no. And I go, yeah, so if I do something wrong, just call me out on it. And it's this really funny moment because at one point in time on Wednesday, I said something to somebody and I just used the wrong word. I just completely used the wrong word and it changed everything about the metaphor that I was building. And he looks at me and smiles and goes, did you mean to say this instead of that? Yep, I was wrong.
Yep.
That's tons of fun. On the trying to use business to make dad life better, one thing that we do with a lot of clients in strategy days, we do something we call a tactical calendar. As you're doing a full strategy day, a lot of little things come up. And so we just draw out on a whiteboard or on paper the next 6 months just in columns and then the next two quarters after that so that we can place who's going on vacation, when's the big event going to happen, when is the – it's kind of like making your own Gantt chart, but not really. And it helps create a visualization of the tactics and the strategy of this organization for the next 6 months and year. I was like, gosh, could I do that with Theo? Could I predict what his next year is going to be like in the loosest bands? And so I was sitting on my whiteboard and I was trying to draw it out. And I went, well, I am both too ignorant and this is too chaotic to create. And that was a really fun moment for me. Go ahead.
That just sounds like a fool's errand, trying to plan out your child's first year or whatever.
Yeah, you know, oh, there's this milestone. Okay, yeah. Is he going to be walking in the next year? For sure. All right. Which of these bands do you think that's going to start occurring? And after it occurs, that's call that the milestone, then what occurs next? I'm like, I don't think that's functionally possible. Whereas I've done this with, you know, rocket companies, right? And banks going through, you know, the wild tumult of the markets and the rates and everything. And I was just like, okay, 3.5 million babies born a year in America. Okay. In the last 10 years, 35 million babies born. Okay. There's got to be a way to get ahead of this. I think I can, even at the loosest bands. And every time I get back to thinking and trying to do it, I go, I think you just got to ride the roller coaster. And then the last thing I wanted to share, just thoughts on fatherhood, is we jokingly say the Bickerton family motto is BFI, which means brute force and ignorance. And my brothers and I, yeah, we apply it whenever we can. It's like, what are you gonna do with that log? Brute force and ignorance. Oh, what are you gonna do with that relation? Brute force and ignorance. It's like, just apply enough of it. And it's both a joke and probably something we use too much. And I was just trying to think through, brute force and ignorance doesn't work for fatherhood. I can't just try harder to be a dad. Whereas I can try harder to climb Sunita's faster. I can try harder to get more clients. I can apply brute force and, you know, ignorance being the joke part of it. But I just can't apply that to being a dad. And then I was thinking about this problem of modern fatherhood. You know, we're generally older. We have more access to information through the internet. And, you know, and this audience has access to more, just more things. There are more things for us to buy at a higher level. And I'm like, okay, how do we use brute force and ignorance? And we have more to maybe get ahead of fatherhood, because I can't do a tactical calendar on Theo's growth, but can I create a plan so that I can grow in modern fatherhood without just brute force and ignorance? And I think that's a big part of, Rob, why we do this podcast. But it was the first time this weekend that I was really trying to think ahead to, what do I need to do? And then I do this with all my CEOs. When your company is twice as big, what are the attributes of that CEO? And are you doing the things to grow so that you have those attributes? What are the attributes of Brad with a three-year-old, or maybe a three and a one-year-old? What do I need to get better at or learn? And I've stalled out on learning. I don't know what that is, but I think that's, to me, the modern fatherhood problem, is how do we grow ourselves in fatherhood faster than the kids and the family need us to? And no answers there, just Brad musings. And hopefully stay tuned as I get little ideas to hang on that Christmas tree. So that's my rants.
Well, that's really great, Brad. And I think having that growth mindset is what we've taken on, and what's what I encourage all the entrepreneurs I work with to do as well, right? Same basic principle, is have a growth mindset. You need to be learning and growing faster than your startup. And in this case too, hopefully as dads, we're learning and growing faster than our kids grow, which is very difficult because they're constantly changing. But that's the plan, right? We're going to try and interview people and try and stay out ahead of it, or at least keep up with it.
Yeah, I just think just a little bit of getting ahead of it, because looking at this is something that you can get. It's wisdom, it's skills, it's community. Are you going to be perfect at it? No, but you know, the enemy of perfect is good. And I was like, I just want to be good at this, at getting ahead of fatherhood and you know, the stuff that I'm really bad at, understanding how school systems work and understanding, you know, even just what size clothes he's going to wear, even though the sizes of clothes are literally age related. I don't think ahead of fatherhood. Whereas in business, that's a natural, I'm a strategist by nature. I naturally think about businesses and, hey, where's the terminal level? How far can we think about this business with any degree of fidelity that matters towards action? It's like, is it 2 years? It's three? It's five? It's, you know, the terminal value of this business when it's sold. I'm really good at that. How do I think about what kind of dad does Theo need in 5 years? Foreign to me. So I'm going to keep working on it.
I'm excited to explore that with you.
But let's flip the coin. How are you? Where are you? Because you're a jet setter. Arthur notes and updates. Tell us more.
Yeah. Been a great, I don't know the last time we did one of these segments, but we are back in the UK from Boston via Colorado. Arthur has now done 5 flights in his 11 weeks of life. So far, so good. I got a dad win that I'll save for later. But right now we're dealing with a bit of a jet laggy baby. He doesn't quite know up or down. We had kind of gotten him to a place where he had slept through the night twice and was doing pretty darn good. And now he's, you know, we've been back in the UK for a couple of days and he's a little all over the place, but happy. So that's good. Just a little all over the place with the sleeping. And the thing that's been on my mind a lot, because I've been listening to a lot of podcasts recently about parenting and other things related to the kind of fatherhood, parenthood journey. And one thing that has come up is, you know, birth rates are down, and there's this kind of prevailing narrative that that parenting and fatherhood is really tough and miserable, and you don't sleep, and you're sick all the time, and you have no time to do anything you like to do, and all that stuff. And a person being interviewed on a podcast I was listening to made the point that we undersell the joys of parenting.
Yeah.
And I think that I wanted to make sure in this podcast, because I find myself falling into the same trap, and it's a two-part trap. One is, it's kind of just more interesting to talk about all the crazy shit that's going on. And, you know, I presume we will get more listeners if we talk about all the crazy things that happen and how hard it is to be a dad. But that's not really our goal is not ultimately to maximize number of listeners. Our goal is to share valuable information. And so I feel like I've got the two sides of the spectrum here from the last couple of weeks on the joys and pains of parenting. And I don't want this to be kind of like, you know, just all the pain. So, but the pain point for the last, 2 weeks was we were in Boston. I was actually at an office, which is rare for me. And my partner called me, Laura, at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon being like, Arthur's been crying for 2 hours. I can't make him stop. I don't know what to do. And I had an hour free where I didn't have any calls. And then I had an all hands call with my company at like 4 o'clock. And the fastest way for me to get home was to walk about half an hour. And I was like, I kind of looked at my calendar, looked at my emails, and made the quick calculation of, all right, Laura, I'm going to come home.
Yeah.
And of course, everyone was supportive of it. And so I went home. And was able to actually, by the time I got there, he was calmed down and asleep, and I was able to get on my all hands call, which is, of course, like classic dad move. But it was definitely like the first time, which I think I feel lucky saying this as a parent, because a lot of people have that. But it was the first time I had to like leave work because my partner was saying, I don't know if I can handle this. He keeps crying. I can't do anything about it. So that was a really slightly scary, but also just kind of hard moment. But on the flip side, I started to think about the joys of parenting. And I think it's probably good to point those things out. So we did things that we would never normally do. So while we were in Boston, we went to the aquarium with our 11-week-old. Now, did he understand any of it? No. Did he sleep through half of it? Yes. But I still have pictures of me kind of showing him over the tank and looking at the fish, and he's looking at all the lights. And we got to go with my sister and brother-in-law. And then we went to the pool today for the first time, and he went swimming for the first time. It took 10 minutes. That's all the time he can spend in the pool, but it was really fun.
Yeah.
And I think overall, we've noticed that it's such a great way to connect with family and friends, because it's this new person who is building these social connections. And so that's been the real joy of the last couple of weeks, is it's a real great excuse to spend more time with family, to travel a little bit, to have people come see you. And that's really fun. So that's the real joy of it. Like, if anyone's worried about being a parent and a high functioning entrepreneur, CEO, business leader, kids bring a lot of joy to life too. It doesn't just slow you down.
Their quality and quantity in that. And what I was thinking about this the other day in this, in very similar thinking, my life is better with Theo. Why? And it's because we talk about the shop wood carry water. I don't mind that, because I'm an adult and I've done a lot of things in my life, including, you know, some hard manual labor-y type things and some hard, you know, law school-y type things, JD MBA type things. But I was trying to figure it out. And I said, you know what I gave up? What Bachelor Brad had that Dad Brad doesn't have? I had more time for dating, which I hated doing. I had more time for drinking, which I didn't really like doing, especially like once you've done enough networking events or all that.
Yeah.
Like, nothing wrong with beers and Friday with the guys, but like, and more time for Netflix. And, you know, there's this show that I've been interested in watching for a little while, and I just haven't had time to watch it because I'm hanging out with Theodore, my son, who is smiling and cool and happy. And I know that that's me receiving that joy. No one in the audience is receiving the joy from Theo. They can only receive it from their kid. But they can more easily reference what they've lost, which is the same thing. You know,
yep.
Are those that bad of things to lose? Dating, drinking, and Netflix? They're pretty weak.
And I think that there is a kind of desire to connect with people and commiserate fellow parents, other things. It's easy to get together and all kind of whine in a cathartic way about how hard it is to be a parent. And when you're having a good time, we feel this, when you're having a relatively good time, you know that your friends are suffering, and it feels disingenuous to come in and be like, well, we're having this great time where, you know, they're bleeding and sore and up all night and trying to feed and all these things. So it can feel like a competition to, or at least the social pressure to kind of be on the negative side, which of course we need to get out. We need to talk to each other about how hard it is and connect, but also not forget the joys of it as well.
Yeah. And I think that's a near universal as well, that everyone I knew who had parents said it was worth it and it's tough. And then I would only hear the tough part.
Yeah. You only hear the tough stories.
Yeah. I couldn't understand that it's worth it. Caveat, you know, as you're walking by somebody you haven't seen in a couple of years and you're like, oh, you've got a 7 and a 5-year-old. And it's like, yeah, a lot of work. Oof, real tough. Worth it though. Sorry. What
but
was
I love
worth
them.
It though.
Yeah.
But I love them. Right? So that's really insightful. Thank you, Rob. Any other thoughts or news or things to share? Or?
No, I think it's time. We've got a great interview coming up. Otis Grigsby, yeah. As I mentioned at the beginning, he's a former NFL player. He went on to be an attorney and now has been involved with multiple startups in multiple different roles. He gives us a ton of different insights on his fatherhood journey, his move from the city to the countryside, and his philosophy on parenting like an athlete. So you're going to want to stick around and hear that. And then make sure you stick around after the interview. Brad and I will be back and we're going to talk about our wins and fails for the week. And I promise I actually have a really good one. It's my worst fail as a father so far. So don't miss it. All right, everyone, welcome back. We've got Otis Grigsby with us. I'll give a quick intro. Otis is the current director of growth at Distill Health, a telehealth marketing agency. In a previous life, Otis has worked at other startups. He, like Brad and I, is a recovering attorney. And before all of that, Otis played in the NFL. Otis, thanks for being with us today.
Yeah, Rob, Brad, thanks so much for having me. Good to be here on the podcast. I'm excited to have an awesome conversation with y'all.
Yeah, we really appreciate you being here. So just to kick it off, real rapid fire, how many kids, what ages?
Yeah, so I've got two kids, boy, girl. The boy is 21 months. The girl is 4 months.
All right. So you're right. Wonderful. You're right in the middle of Brad and I, 4 months. Brad, how old is Theo now?
Oh, Theo's 9 months, and we'll get into the first cold plus teething journey, I'm sure, with Otis in a minute, but that's what we went through today or this week.
Oh, yeah, that's not fun.
But we're in rapid fire, so we got to keep going.
Sorry, I'm going to keep going. All right, tell us a little bit about your current title and role.
Yeah, so I'm the director of growth for Distill Health. And so Distill Health, real quick, is a health tech marketing company. We work with companies that have medical devices, digital health platforms. We do help work with companies with telehealth platforms, but not too many of those anymore. And yeah, I pretty much do a lot of different things. I do legal, I do recruiting, I'm doing content. I mean, I'm not doing it right now, but I'm about to get into it. And I'm also just kind of like, you know, the voice of reason. It's my wife started this company with her business partner. And I'm kind of like the guy who just kind of comes in and settles things down, you know. Nice. It's like, hey, nice. How about we consider this? What about that? So I'm that guy.
That's awesome. Jack of all trades. Bold move. I want to get into that. Working with your partner, though, and your co-parent. That's going to be interesting. Yeah. But real quick, how many companies have you been involved with at like a leadership level?
Yeah, I'd say three.
Nice. And, you know, anything else the audience should know about you right now?
Man, what else should you know about me? I'm the kind of person, so I love optimizing myself, right? And when I'm not optimized, I feel it, I know it. And one of the things I'm realizing right now is I need to start exercising more. I mean, I know everyone needs to exercise more, but some people's brains work even better when they exercise than others. And my brain is like that. I need to exercise. I need to sweat. I need to be in the sun. And, you know, we'll talk about moving to the farm. But like being outside, getting my hands in the dirt, it's something that's just really kind of activated that inner child in me. And I've got just more, you know, go. So it's been really good.
What's your kind of workout of choice?
Workout of choice. I use a Tonal. So if I'm not sure if anyone, for the people out there who are not familiar with Tonal, it is a really cool wall mounted weightlifting machine that has a giant screen. They have on-demand workouts, and the weights are all magnetic weights. So it's like electromagnetic weights. It simulates up to 200 pounds of resistance, but there's no actual weights in it. And it tracks all your gains, and it can tell when you're tired. It makes adjustments, and it's sick. I absolutely love it. So
I'll tell you why I don't like it.
You say you
that
don't like
one,
it?
I don't like it for exactly one reason. My friend who was kind of more on the tech nerdy, you know, fatty fat zone, got it. And now he's training for an Ironman. And that just scares me. That's why I don't like the Tonal. That's, it got him from fatty fat through, oh, I like exercising, into he's 35 hours a week. And I mean, he's a bachelor with a well-to-do place, but that's why I don't like Tonal, which is to say.
Too good at his job, basically.
Yeah.
It works.
I'm busy.
It works too well, and kind of removes the excuses in our minds. It's like, I can do 20 minutes of this. Like, yeah, I can get that in.
Well, I love too that it finds where you're at on the day. Because I find out on days when I'm exercising or fatherhood too, that when I'm not having it, I will either double down on the thing that's not working or I will bail. And really what I need is that voice behind me saying, no, this is how much you should be putting in today. This is your optimal and your maximal. And like, I don't ever know that. So sometimes I flip them. So, but hey, let's not talk about sports equipment. Rob, actually to have maybe the intro topic, Otis, as I was listening to you, I was thinking that you've gone through four transitions and I just met you. Four transitions, right? So athlete, sportsman, lawyer, becoming a dad, country, moving to the country out of the city. That's four major transitions. And maybe you haven't thought about it this way, but what have you learned about transitions? Like, I used to be this, and now I'm not that, and I haven't been this yet. Now I am this. And please.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll add one more. I mean, working in startups too. That's a, Ooh. You know, I think, so for me, I love transitions, right? I've always been the kind of person who, you know, have you guys heard of the Clifton StrengthsFinder 2.0?
Yes,
I have not.
It's fantastic. I mean, if you're the kind of person that's into like the personality test, I think this is the best one. It basically will tell you your top five strengths and then a bunch of other strengths. But, you know, one of my top five strengths is adaptability. And I think it's a strength just because I love it. I love change. I love the awkward feeling of not knowing what to do and then having to go figure it out. So it kind of plays into, you know, my interest in strategy and just the future. So I think that what transitions do for me is it kind of helps with this healthy reset. There's never like, I'm 40. I don't even know how old I am. I'm 43, 43 years old. And you too. All right.
Yeah. Well, sorry. On Monday, I turned 43. So I'm definitely younger than you. And I just want to let that be known. Okay. So you're the elder wise man here by months.
Hey, you're looking like a young 43. So this is, that's good. And happy birthday early.
Tax day.
Yeah, but no, it helps you just, it helps me to feel just young. Like when I'm constantly learning, it's hard to feel old. If you talk to the people who are saying like, oh, we're getting older, or I'm older, or whatever, it's always people who are just doing the same things over and over again. And when you think about, you know, having kids, for instance, You're always doing something new. I mean, that transition to having kids is one thing, but then like it's a transition every week. You know, like last week is different from the week before. It's like, oh, you know what? He was totally into chicken and now he wants shrimp. And this week he wants like greens and oh, and he was like pooping regularly and like now it's like a brick that he's not getting out for like 2 straight days. Everything's changing and I love it. I mean, sometimes I hate it because I don't like not knowing. I mean, I like not knowing and figuring it out, but when you can't figure it out, it's like, oh, so, you know.
So we talk about this a lot between each other, Rob and I, but then all of our interviews, there's this moment which comes up, which is what I can control and what I don't control. And it's funny because in the businessy side of things, control can be variable to extremely high to perfect. And then on the dad side of things, it's like sometimes I have a little insight or ability to influence, but it's minor, right? It doesn't matter how many books I read, podcasts I listened to, push-ups I did, food I did or didn't eat. Theo's teething and has a cold. I do not control these things. But they're both, right? Because I was in control of something in the afternoon, right? In my case, this week, I was on a board meeting and there's one part that I had influence in and expertise on. And literally after that, I hear him crying in the background and I go and pick him up. I'm like, I got no control, buddy. I'm just on the ride with you. That's the best I got. And that transition, that juxtaposition was beautiful, alarming, exhausting. I don't know what, but it was what it was.
Well, to push on the kind of theme of control for a second, because Otis, I reached out to you about this podcast after a LinkedIn post you didn't made about kind of hopping to the fact that you used to tease people for leaving the city because the city's where it's at, and you know this is where things happen. And you're like, "Hey, I'm putting my hands up, guys. I'm leaving. I'm out. I got kids, and I need to be in the countryside." And so I imagine that was a little bit, I mean, I think you say some of it in your post, that was a little bit of kind of a play for control over environment and how you raise your kids. So I'm really just fascinated, kind of, can you talk us through that decision, like what it looked like? And let's start there. I got more to ask, but.
I'm a big city guy. I've always lived no matter where I worked, whether it was at NFL or for a law firm or a startup, I'm working as close to the city as possible. And if the job is further away from the city, I'm going to be as close to my job as possible. And I just think that, you know, it's just easier to for people to see you, for you to see people, you run into the right people and you have the right conversations and there's all this energy. And so I wanted to force, you know, that life as a parent into my life as Otis Grigsby, you know, person who's doing the most in the community, right? And a lot of people would tell me, yeah, that's not sustainable. It's not going to work, blah, blah, blah. And every time someone tells me something's not going to work, I'm like, I'll show you. That is my
I
mentality.
got this.
I will show you. I
Well,
mean, go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
we talked about, I think, on one of our last episodes, a lot of Brad and I and my wife and I kind of took on this identity of like we're the kick-ass parents who can do things. Nothing's going to stop us. And then we hit a brick wall, and we're like, oh. It's really hard to shake that identity and like ask for help because like we're gonna be those parents who are like out doing it all, but continue.
We ran into that one too pretty quick. Like, well, we're not doing anything actually.
No. Hey, you want to
But
come
yeah.
see me and say hi? Great, come to my house. Here's the hours.
Yeah. And you know, and I think what happened really was my son, you know, we had this really nice like 3-story condo, and you know, it was a lot of space, but it was 3 different floors. You can only be on one floor at a time. And my son just he's everywhere. He wants to be outside. And we walk out the door, there's like danger everywhere. There's no yard, there's nothing, and there's like a pretty busy street right out there. And like a lot of weird stuff too. I mean, like we saw a guy walking down the street completely naked. I've found bullets on the ground. I mean, I like some of the most ridiculous things. Oh, there was a high speed car chase
Oh, of course, yes.
that ended in the trees, like right next to our place. And there were maybe about like 15 police cars, and I went outside and I hear them chasing this woman through the woods. I mean, it was just so there were like a lot of just crazy things that happen in cities and
And for
in the
those of us who don't know, where was all this? Because it sounds like a hellscape, but I don't think it
It
was.
was, I know where it was, Nelson, British Columbia. That's where I'm from. It's a very famous story that Otis left. Oh, wait, no.
Yeah, it's the east side of Austin, like the cool part of Austin, right? Like, so it's where everyone wants to be, but there's a lot of weird things going on that go beyond what traditionally people in Austin expect to be weird. And so we took a trip to England. My wife is from England, so we went to visit her family, and we stayed out in the countryside.
Otis,
And
you,
go ahead.
sorry, my wife's English as well. I didn't know that about you.
I did not know that about you either. What, so where is your wife from in England?
She's from the Midlands near Leicester, and we live in Oxford about half the time.
Oh, wow. Okay. So my wife is from Birmingham, around Birmingham,
Okay.
and we stayed in the Cotswolds when we were there.
Yeah, I love it there. Amazing spot.
Yeah, and so it's like our son's out here. He's running around. He's in nature, and it was just kind of perfect. And we were like, do we need to move to
Bing.
England? it was close there for a while. Like, we really thought about just completely moving to England. And then what I realized was, if we live in the countryside, like it would only work if we were there just kind of like for the summer or something like that, because the countryside, I just felt like it's all the homes out there are a little too, everything's a little too low. Like, I'm hitting my head on entryways everywhere, and I'm talking to
I
people and
don't
they're
know.
like,
I don't know
yeah,
how tall you are. I'm 6 foot, and my back hurts, and I think you're taller than I am
I'm
by quite
six
a bit.
four. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a pain. And people are like, oh yeah, it's normal. And then the lack of AC everywhere. And they're just like, well, we don't need AC. I'm like, I'm sorry, but do you guys remember like 2 years ago when you were all burning? Like, you kind of do now. It's just, things have changed. So we maybe we'll do something out there, but it's gonna be a while. So
Okay,
anyways,
but now
oh, go ahead. Yeah.
where are you now? Because that's what I get to be the audience today, which is I don't know anything about you, so I get to ask the simple questions.
I love it. Yeah. So we moved from Austin, east side of Austin, to
Sure.
Wimberley, Texas, which is in the hill country. I think the population of this town is 2,600 people.
Nice.
So,
Nice.
we're on like almost 11 acres of land. There's trees and there's some, grassland and rocky land, and there's a river like right down the street, not on our property. And it's just, there's deer. Like, you look at, you walk outside and you see like 15 deer in the morning, and my son's chasing them and the deer hate him.
So
And
no,
yeah.
good. Let that be known forever. Then he loves to chase them. They don't like him so much.
Yeah.
So it sounds to me it became obvious to you to do something that didn't work for previous Otis, and then would work for Father Otis. But now that you're there, right? Are you the reluctant traveler? Are you frustrated by being there and just saying, "Look, this is so much better for my kids. I'll just suck it up, Buttercup." Or is this like you have changed as well by being there? And you could, by the way, you can be honest. You could be saying, no, this sucks. I just do it for the
Oh,
kids.
if you guys ask the right questions, I will tell you exactly what sucks.
Okay, good. What's the right question? Now I want to know. Angriest moment with your spouse since baby?
I mean,
No.
I'll tell you all that in a little bit if you
All
want.
right,
No,
fair enough.
but
Fair enough.
no,
Fair enough. Yeah. How are you doing with the transition there?
it's great. Honestly, I've been back in Austin a few times. And every time I come back, I'm like, I can't believe we lived here this long. Like, this place is I think, and it's, and I don't know if it's just Austin. It's really more along the lines of, we are all being forced to move way faster than we should be. Everything is just like, you know, as much as I like being optimized, everything's like, we gotta do more. We gotta do more. We gotta do more. We gotta do it faster, faster, faster. And I'm like, I like the peace. I like the pace. I like having conversations with strangers in the grocery store. Like what? Like, yeah. Every time I go to the grocery store, I'm talking to people who are younger than me, my age, who are like 40 years older than me, people who look like they voted for Trump and like twice. And it's just, and it's all good. Everything's really, it feels like, you know, it feels like growing up, what it felt like growing up in the 90s, you know, like it just feels simpler. You know, you can just like walk down the street and you can hop on your bike and there's just a lot less of that. Everyone being afraid of each other, or everyone judging other people. I'm sure it happens, but it feels very different, more welcoming. And you know, the things about Texas that stereotypical parts of Texas where it's just super welcoming, we're experiencing that now. Whereas in Austin, a lot of people say, you know, it's all these people coming in from all over ruining the character of Austin. But I don't know if it's the people. I think it's really just the lifestyle that we all have kind of been forced into with our work and only caring about making money and stuff.
And now that you're out there, is your company remote? How what does work look like now? Are you finding yourself refreshed and working harder, or are you taking a slower pace to that as well?
Oh man, so here's some honesty. Work is so the location being out here makes it easier to take care of our kids for sure. The work is all remote, so that's gonna get done the same way. But having two kids under two makes it just really hard to get work done, to just be, you know, like the time that I can do work really is, you know, if I wake up at 5:30, 5 o'clock, 5:30, I've got till from then till about 7:30. And then I've got about like 1:45 to 3:45, 4 o'clock. That's the nap time for our oldest. The youngest, she sleeps she has three naps a day, so no big deal. And things were actually a lot easier when it was just the first one. And I was like, man, this is a trap, because eventually those two naps are going to drop down to one.
Yeah.
And that one nap is going to drop down to something that's like, you know, like an hour. So then, you know, you got dinner, and we usually make our dinner. I usually make, well, we trade off, but like we make dinner and then it's the bedtime routine. And that is like 7 o'clock to like, you know, 7 o'clock to about 8:15. And then after that, it's like, okay, 8:30, like, okay, I've got a choice. I can do work until 10:30, or I can watch Netflix and chill. Like, I mean, it's
the last part of your day, right? And
yeah.
I think anybody involved with a high growth company doesn't want to give poor effort. And
yeah.
So then when it's all of a sudden, it's like, you're exhausted. Hey, please update this website. Hey, please make this contact. Hey, please reach out to this person we met at the conference 4 weeks ago, who's possibly a lead for an enterprise sale 9 weeks from now. You don't want to do that when you're just waste, because that's mental work, and that mental work is tough. And something that Rob and I talk about a lot is a book, but we didn't read the book. We just used the words, chop wood, carry water. That's what fatherhood, a lot of the time in effect, is. My job is to do this thing. For me, particularly in my family, it's basic cook and clean. Advanced cook and clean, definitely mom. We're going to cook something well. We're going to put a meal together, or like, you know, we're going to clean underneath the thing. Sure, great. But like the day-to-day, chop wood, carry water, that's me. And I did Bachelor Brad, who's not that long ago in my memory. I did the dishes like really, really well, like every week or so. You know, and it's like now, like if I don't stay ahead of it, I'm behind. Behind is not okay.
Not good.
Not good. So, I want to, Rob, can I ask the next series?
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, I got two questions for you, Otis, if you got a sec. Well, you got a second.
Oh,
Just
sure.
transitioning. Fatherhood, what is different from receiving it, and what is different from giving it? So I don't know who your father is. I don't know your story there, anything, but what was different from receiving versus different from giving?
Let's see. So my dad was, I think, so my dad did a great job. It was different. So I'd say he was pretty intense about stuff. It was a lot of, and what I remember though is like from, I guess, like the age of like 5. So I don't know, I can't tell you what my life was like
Ah,
when I was
fair.
21 months, but I can tell you I'm not going to repeat some of the stuff that he did. A lot of my life was really, I remember doing a lot of chores. I remember a lot of discipline. It was heavy discipline, and a lot of it was because, well, I was a problem. I mean,
I mean, I haven't known you long. Still are.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I could be a problem for this episode right here.
Oh, he's holding back. That's fine. Work with entrepreneurs every day.
yeah, I was a problem. I was the kid who was like, let's invent some ways to like destroy stuff, right? I had an idea. Every time something happened around me, like I'm very observant. So, okay, a great example. Ketchup packs. We had a bunch of them in the drawer for some reason. Like, why are we saving all the ketchup packs from like the, from Burger King? So I got one and I rolled up the end of it. And I was like, I wonder what would happen if I just rolled the end up and stomped on it. My thought was the ketchup would shoot straight forward on the kitchen floor. That would have been
Awesome.
cool, but what actually happened? It shot straight up onto the ceiling. So I was like, okay. We need to do this more. We need to get all the ketchup packs. So I had ketchup all over the ceiling. I mean, I like we threw mud balls.
Successfully, you got ketchup all over the ceiling. Let's just like
Yeah.
be
Yeah, that
honest.
was a win for me. And like the neighbors, they were, moving dirt and like putting dirt in piles. Like, I guess they were like, I don't know what they were doing with their yard, but there was like giant piles of dirt around their yard and around their house. And it rained a ton, and I grabbed some mud and I made a ball and I threw it at my brother, and it missed and it hit the side of their house and it stuck. And I was like, idea. We should make more of these and cover
Yes.
their house.
Yeah, it's perfect. No one will
So
ever
yeah,
see it,
so
and
like
it's
I, you
brilliant.
know, so there was so there was a lot of discipline, and I didn't really love that, but I spent a lot of time playing like, psychological games with my dad. Because he wanted me to whistle while I worked, and it's like if you're gonna make me do something I don't want to do, I'm going to not be happy about it. But that would get me in more trouble. So I developed this kind of thing where if he said something I didn't like, first I would smile because frowning wasn't good, and then he was upset that I was smiling because he thought I was being smart. And then I developed like this poker face, and it was pretty cool. And the next time I saw someone who had that kind of energy, it was Tim Duncan, and I was like, Tim Duncan
Okay.
must have had a bunch of chores, and must have been his dad must have been all on him
He
a bunch
figured it
too.
out.
So just the dead face, not a, just like I'm focused, I'm just working here. So yeah, so with my son.
I can't win anyway or either way. So this is my least way of losing is nothing. I give you nothing.
You get nothing. Yeah.
And so that's the discipline part of the story, right? Like you can't win, but you always have to do more. And you found, adoption strategies. And my story is very different from yours, but I also found chameleon-like adoption strategies. And this is why I earnestly want to know from you, what of that do you take and say, this is valuable? it may not be fun, but valuable to my next generation versus the I'm letting that one go because that was just dumb 1980s dad stuff. Like they didn't know what they were doing. Blessings upon them. They did their best. I am not pushing that forward.
Yeah. So I still think the discipline is important. I just think that there are smarter ways to discipline people. I think a lot of people kind of stall out because like a lot of times when you're disciplining, if you're disciplining from a place of anger, your brain just doesn't work the same. It doesn't matter what you're doing. If you're angry, you can't think as well. Your creativity goes out the window. Mm. So I'm looking for ways to basically trick my kid into loving chores, right? Like you're going to be outside with me watching me dig up weeds. He's literally saying, pull weeds, pull weeds. He's pulling weeds at 21.
Awesome.
Yeah, he's not doing a good job, and I don't really want him pulling weeds, but he's watching me and he's like, I want to pull weeds. So it's like, how can I essentially gamify, you know, the garbage
discipline
that no one wants to do?
Yeah, that's like
and real. Sorry, real quick. There's a shout out to a friend of mine, Chris Bergman. This guy had an app called Chore Monster. It doesn't exist anymore, but parents loved it. I don't even know why it's not around anymore. Basically, it was this app that gamified chores. Kids would get like stickers and like rewards, like monster farts and all kinds of like cool things. And it, you know, so it's like, yeah, I want to turn, you know, the parts of life that we don't really enjoy into something that's somewhat fun. I mean, cooking, like if he can see me enjoying cooking and making like great, delicious meals, then maybe he'll be excited about that as well, rather than it being like, oh, I'm complaining, I hate cooking. If I'm constantly upset about it, then he's not going to want to do it. So things like that. But then other times, you know, I'm the kind of guy who's going to, I'm going to spank my kids, right? Like that's not for everybody. I'm not going to, I mean, I'm going to be smart about it. I'm going to be sparing with it, but there are times where I feel like that has to happen. And my son is displaying some of the same kind of like FU energy that I had as a
I was
kid.
Going to call it Otis energy, by the way. I was literally going to say Otis energy because this is you owning the part of it that's you. Gosh, I tell you, you know, Theo's 9 months, which is nothing. And yet I am so much further on the I'm okay if he cries. I'm not okay if he needs something. I'm okay if he's just not having it. He hasn't figured it out yet. Right. And I'm just way more okay with it than mom, than Sarah Beth. And he likes her better. So maybe I'm doing it wrong, but she's also got other attributes that he likes. But yeah, that's a fascinating thing is when is discipline this gentle version of like, let me bring you into this gamification. And when is it? No, that is the barrier you've gone past that you don't understand it. I am bringing you to that understanding. And here's how I'm doing it. I'll spank you or tell you or harsh words, whatever the thing is. I just want to take a pause. Rob, you get the definite next question set. But Otis, I have learned more about being a father in this last 15 minutes than I have from almost anyone. Like, seriously, man, this is why we do it. Pretending we do this for other people, we're doing this for ourselves. And you are teaching
me. I'm not even
right
pretending
now
that I'm doing it for other people. This is totally for me.
Well, Rob, because this is for you, what questions
Fair
do
enough.
You have?
Yeah. So on that kind of, I have a, I'm interested in something here. So we asked one of our last interviews was a serial entrepreneur. He was on Shark Tank. You know, all he's ever done in his life is start companies, build them, sell them. He's done it like 12 times.
Oh, wow.
And you know, a lot of our conversation was around, that's a pretty crazy life being an entrepreneur. Like it's not easy. Mm. Would you like that for your kids? And then, so Otis, I think for you, you have not only the entrepreneurial bug, but then you're also a lawyer, which while a traditionally nice career, there's a whole lot of baggage that goes along with being a lawyer that both Brad and I know. And then on top of that, you played a sport at an incredibly high level that also might be considered dangerous. So like, as you think about your kids, there's these three buckets that they could follow you into. Would you be excited if they did all three? Would you be excited if they only did one? Is there one where you really hope they don't end up there? I'd be interested to hear kind of what you would, what you might wish for your kids.
Counselor.
Yeah, no, that is a great question. I what I am doing, like, so even today, I just, so I love making art, and I haven't really done it much in the last like 20 years, but my wife got me like this really cool acrylic painting set. And for the first time I opened it up out in the barn, and I just let Jude just paint. And so I don't want him to become as good of a painter or drawer as I am, or I don't want him to become like as good of a football player as I was, or like, what I want him to do is get exposed to all these different things. Like, you know, and I want him to make his own decisions. I don't want him to be afraid to play football. Right. But I don't want him to feel like he has to. It would be really unfortunate to me if he didn't want to play football because he was afraid of getting hit. Like, I wouldn't love that. But what I am doing is, I mean, I'd rather him not go to law school. If I'm thinking about it, I love that I'm a lawyer. I love understanding the law, and it's something that just interests me. And it's probably going to be something that interests him a little bit too, because let's be honest, I'm going to read case law.
You're going to nerd out about it. And I get this. I nerd out about it. Look, my license has been active for 7 years, and I still read case law, and I try to get Sarah Beth to think about it. She doesn't care. That's fine. She's still not going to care. Theo's not going to care. Nope. But I'm going to still do it. Yeah. Okay. So the lawyer side will influence him, and the football side, I love that it's not skills, it's not discipline, it's not athleticism, it's not being famous, it's not pushing forward, it's not getting out of the problems. It's the, what you keyed on was if he's scared of getting hit. Because look, anybody who's been a lawyer has been hit. That's an emotional hit, that's a philosophical hit, but you have been hit.
Mm-hmm.
And anyone who's played football, or for me, rock climbing, or Rob, I know you've fallen off your bike
more times than I care to count.
We've had concussions. Anyone here had a concussion from their sports?
Probably.
Yeah.
That's like an unfair question to ask the NFL player.
This is my craftiness.
My concussion was from a bike accident, actually. But
so was mine. So join the club. But I.
Yeah.
Okay, mine was which one? It's just interesting to me that the fear of being hit. And so this is the father to son side of it. And I'm going to ask the father to daughter side of it. But that was a fascinating little bit for you, is go after what you want. But I as the father, don't let you to not try things out of perceptual fear. I am perceptually scared of being hit. Well, get hit 40 times. Now you know it. Are you in or you out? That's kind of what I heard from you. And you can tell me, no, Brad, you just totally botched that.
I think that's right. I think it's, you know, and I also say that, so growing up, I wanted to be a pro baseball player. And football just happened to work out. But I think if I had better coaching, probably would have made it as a pro baseball player. I would love it if my son played pro baseball. I tell him, like, I've been telling him since he was born, Aaron Judge 2.0, like, this is you. Like, I see it, your legs, like,
ready to go. You built for it.
Yeah, you're gonna be like 3 inches taller than me. I'm seeing it. But you know, it's just like, let's just get him to be like this well-rounded person, where he isn't forced into anything. He can choose. Like, it, so like, we're gonna read a bunch of books, not because I want him to be smarter than everyone. I just want him to feel confident enough to pursue whatever path it is he wants to pursue. If he wants to be a doctor, I'm not gonna tell him to be a doctor, but if he wants to do that, I don't want him thinking like, well, I'm not really good at school or whatever. I want him just to feel confident in going whatever path he wants. And, you know, unless it's like drug dealer, you know, we're not going to do that. But
typically frowned upon.
Have you thought?
Hold on, I've got. Sorry, Brad. I got a good follow up here, which is: so have you thought about, like, if he says he wants to be a doctor, or he says he wants to be a baseball player, or he says he wants to be a lawyer? Have you thought at all? Because I've been thinking about this, and I don't know the answer. Have you thought about all about, like, what position you'd like to take? Would you like to be the coach? Do you want to get him up out of bed and be like, "You said you wanted to play baseball. We're getting up at 5:30 to do this," or "You said you wanted to be a lawyer. We're going to go do extra time with, you know, and read these cases." Or do you want to let them direct and kind of be in the background?
That's actually a really good question. So my dad was the guy who was just, like, constantly on me to practice, you know, after a basketball game. You know, first of all, they would never let me shoot because I couldn't shoot. So I'd get a rebound and I'd throw it up and I'd miss. And then it's like free throws and I miss my free throws. So then after the game, it's like December, my dad's like, "We're going to go shoot free throws in the driveway." And I'm like, "Are you serious?" And then with baseball, he wanted me to be a pitcher. I was happy being a first baseman and a center fielder. He's like, your arms are so long. You'd be a perfect pitcher. But he didn't know how to teach me how to pitch. So at some point, I started skipping balls into the dirt intentionally, trying to, like, hit him in his crotch. And then he was like, he was mad that I was doing that.
But you had the stone face, right? You still had the stone face?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, you'd learned that already.
Yeah. So, and then he was like, "Stop skipping the balls." And I'm like, "All right, cool." So then I started throwing wild pitches and shattering boards on our fence. Like, and then he turned around. So then he changed positions. And then I started throwing balls, like, all the way down the street. And I would just, like, kind of slowly go to get the ball. So I don't want to be, I don't want my son to feel that, to feel like he's being pushed too hard. If he wants me to coach him in an area, I'm going to do it. You know, David Pollack he has, like, a really interesting post I saw on Instagram about how his son came to him and said, "Hey, Dad, can you coach me up, teach me how to play defensive end?" And he's like, "Son, I don't want to be your coach. I want to be your dad." And it was like one of those cool, you know, moments, I guess, but, like, for Instagram. But I'm like, and I mean, I love David. I've only met him once, and, you know, he's a really great guy, and a lot of his insights on being a father, I respect a lot. And I even respect that position that he has. But, like, he knows, and he said, if I teach my son how to play defensive end, he's going to be one of the best. But, like, I don't want to do that. I'm like, dude, like, you should, though, because we got Christian McCaffrey because of Ed McCaffrey, right? Like, we don't have Christian McCaffrey without Ed McCaffrey. So, you know, use that gift if your kid wants it.
Yeah.
It's funny because I get to bring in a little of my expertise here, because I work with a lot of startups where, again, husbands and fathers, brothers, sisters, mothers and daughters. And I always just require one thing, which is a contract of consent. And it needs to be re-upped every 90 days. And it's no fault for letting it go. And every single one who writes out their contract of consent, three little things, I don't care what. We agree to have coffee once. We agree to disagree. We agree to the exit avenues, whatever it is. Every single one that's ever sat down and done that every 90 days never needed it.
Mm.
And 50-50 otherwise.
I'm stealing that. That's really good.
Claim it as your own, man. Just run with it. Make it go good in the world.
I'm going to give you credit. I mean, whether you came up with this on your own or not, I'm going to give you credit as the person I got it. I learned it from. So,
well, I did it. Matt Vogels and his brother, Nathan Vogels, were great guys, but Matt Vogels, who will listen to this, he was CEO and he was bringing his brother in. So he's founder CEO, team of eight, brings his brother in to be COO. And they're like, how do we do this? Cause there's such a differentiator because it's not coming in as equals. It's coming in as CEO founder and coming in as COO. I said, guys, sit down and do this. And they're incredible guys and their company failed because of COVID, but that's another story. That's where it came up. It was, there was a need and three people got a room and thought about it critically. So longer story for another day.
All right.
But I think that's so fascinating because the reason why I asked the question to start with is I think a lot about when in my work life, one of, I think, my biggest weaknesses is I'm often very happy to get hands-on with the people who work with me and help them really dig into the problems, but I probably do too much for them. And so when I think about being a dad, I'm trying to, and I'm like, I've got an 11-week-old. I got time, but this is why I'm doing it now, is I don't want to solve his problems for him. And when I think about work, I think about how I should probably be harder on people because I should probably expect more of them. And then as a dad, it's this crazy razor to walk, which is I want them to love me. I want them to be my friend. I don't want them to fear me. But also it's probably my job to push them out of their comfort zone pretty consistently. And I think that's something where we might have seen from dads in the past that were a little, you know, I think our generation is like 80% more or hands-on or something than our parents' generation. And so we're trying to be really hands-on, and I'm trying to think very kind of thoughtfully and deliberately about how do I walk that line of, I want them to love me. I want them to always feel like they can come give me a hug, but I also want them to know that I expect a lot of them and they should go expect a lot of them themselves. So I don't know where I'm going with that other than that's on my mind a lot.
Yeah, no, I can relate to that. And, you know, the moments where I need to establish, I tell my wife, I'm like, I know like people, a lot of people, especially people in Austin don't like what I'm about to say, but it's like, you've got to establish dominance. Like it's, I hate comparing a child to an animal, but it's
I do like, too.
It's like a dog, you know? I mean, unfortunately they're smarter than dogs and they're, I prefer them. I mean, I love dogs, but I prefer my children to animals, but you've got to be able, you know, you think about how that dog like still loves you, even though you trained him, you disciplined him, like you know. And so with me, in the moments where I have to check my son and remind him who actually is in control here, and he starts crying, I pick him up and I hold him and I'm telling him like, hey, look, you know, I'm talking in a nice calm voice, like, hey, you can't do that. Here's why. You might not understand it right now, but eventually you will. And it's a process, but what I know that I can't do is be afraid of him not liking me. Mm. And it's just like, there's never been a time in my life where worrying about if someone likes me has served me, like ever. Like I've never, ever, ever gotten anywhere by worrying if this person likes me or if this person's going to be upset about what I have to say. If I'm being honest, if I'm being a jerk, which I don't do, but if I'm being honest, if I'm being respectful, if I'm respecting, you know, your personal characteristics and how you operate, but I'm also having to say something that's just honest and real, like I can't worry about if you're going to hate me or not. And I make this comment, this is like, I hate saying this because this feels like one of those like weird braggy things, but it's not what it is. But I went to a high school that was 4,500 students. Wow. And for some reason, I was voted like Mr. Judson, the most popular person in school. I didn't lobby for this. I didn't hang out with anyone.
Don't hedge, man. You were just a shit. Okay, moving on.
I didn't go to parties. I didn't drink. Like people were constantly trying to get me, like, Otis, we're going to get you to smoke this weed. I'm like, no, I'm not smoking anything. We're going to go drinking. I don't drink and I'm not doing it. I didn't do anything. I was a boring square. I went to school. People made fun of me because when the bell rang, I was on a beeline. Actually, it's a straight line. I don't know why people say beeline. That was a straight line to my class. And yeah, our class president was like, hey, you ever see Otis in the hallway? It's like, hey, Otis, where are you going? It's like, class. So
I just practiced my 10-yard sprint. What are you talking about?
Yeah, I'm like, I don't have time for you. I came here for school. So what I learned in that from that whole thing was there are all these people trying to be liked. And then it's like the person who's just treating people right, who's being respectful of others, but also most important, respecting themselves, right? Respecting their own time, respecting their own schedule. I came here to go to school. I came here to play football, to practice. I didn't come here to like the girl that wanted me to leave, cut school and go home with her, like to hook up or whatever. Sorry, no. Like, I mean, I was that guy, like turning down all kinds of weird things that
I remember
kids my age wouldn't do. Go ahead. Yeah.
It didn't click for me. I was fortunate enough to do, I did a JD MBA. So it's a joint degree. And the first year's one, second year's the other. And the first year of JD, I felt like these nerds, these squares. I was like, oh, I get it. And there's reasons why I fit and didn't fit in there. But then the next year I go to MBA. An MBA is what you think it is. Like, yeah. And it was 2009, right? So these are a bunch of sales dudes who were smart and capable and lost their jobs, decided to go to school. And so what are we doing? Well, you know, we're going out and, hey, getting to know everybody and go drinking. And you know, it's like these guys, you know, glory muscles and all this other stuff. And one day one guy looks at me, you know, because I can talk in class and do stuff. We're at this drinking party and he goes, hey, Brad, you know, dare you to drink that next drink? And I go, no. Oh, that is a big social no-no cue. This guy's tall. Mm-hmm. His name's Doug. He's got blonde hair. I have done this wrong. And he looks at me. He's like, you can't man up and do that? And I had this moment and I went, oh, I'm sorry, Doug. I just think a real man makes his own decisions. And I've never lost that in my life. Sounds like, Otis, you got that way early. You were being a real man making your own decisions. And your decisions were, I don't want to do what society asked me to. I don't want to be drugged down. I don't want to be like thinking about this other stuff that I know can't produce value or greatness or glory. I am going to go forward as a straight line into the things that I know work. And that's what I heard from your story.
Yeah. I'll tell you the moment I had the transition, I shifted from, you know, taking the dare, doing what other people were
taking
doing.
The dare.
Yeah. Fourth grade. Yeah, there was this really awesome, like somebody, some kids and their parents built like this really cool, skate park. Like a giant half pipe, like quarter pipes, all like just all the cool stuff. I didn't know how to skate, but I had a really cool BMX, and at least I thought it was cool. And my friend after school, so you know, that was back when kids rode their bikes to school and rode home unsupervised. So on the way home, we stop at the skate park, and my friend Chris Winkler, he says, "Hey man, I dare you to jump that quarter pipe with your bike." And I was like, okay. Now in my mind, I wasn't going to do it. Like I was just going to just ride up to the top and stop and then like laugh about how, oh yeah, right. So I race toward this ramp and I hit my brakes, like, and I stopped, wheel hits the edge. And I did exactly what I said. Uh-huh, yeah, right. Problem is, my wheel got caught over the edge.
No.
And I just slowly tipped over and landed on my face.
Oh.
Knocked me unconscious. So that was when I actually was concussed. Oh, actually, it was another time in baseball I got hit in the head with the ball. But I was concussed. The ground was like a bunch of like loose gravel. So I had chunks of gravel embedded in my face. A good portion of my skin was ripped off from the ground, like just the roughness of the ground, just scraping it. It looked like Hannibal Lecter was just like peeling pieces of my skin off. I mean, I woke up in the ambulance, and I remember asking them, because my whole face felt like it was on fire. And I remember asking them, what does my face look like? And they were like, oh, don't worry about that. And I was like, oh, no.
Oh, no.
Don't worry about that is not the right answer.
Oh no.
That is the only thing I'm worried about right now.
My face is destroyed. It feels destroyed. It totally is. I know it. And it was. And the doctors were like, we're gonna give you this Physoderm. You're gonna like wash your face 3 times a day. I was basically like a burn victim. And so every day I had to go to school, and like kids would ask me, what happened to your face? Every single day, kids that already knew would ask me, what's going on with your face? Why does your face look like that? Why? And I mean, I had this giant scar. You can't really see it now. You can see a little bit of it, but this thing was huge. This was where they had stitches there, and it didn't do a good job. And I remember the doctor saying, hey, we can talk about plastic surgery so we can get rid of that scar. You don't have to deal with that. And I told him, I was like, no, let's leave it, because I need a reminder next time. Like, if I look in the mirror and see this, it'll help me to just not do those things. And yeah, that scar was something that people asked me about. Like, so long after my face cleared up and skin got back to normal, I mean, I still had some dents in my face for probably like a good like 15 years.
Wow.
But the scar stayed on my face to the point where people asked me about it until like maybe like college, where like no matter who I met, someone was like, what happened to your face? I mean, if they were an honest enough person, because it was jarring. So yeah, I just kind of like
Let go of the
school
dare of that, but I want to talk about your daughter some more and some of those thoughts, but because we're a bunch of dudes and we're still talking about our mistakes and our concussions and our scars, and I have them. You want your son to raise a little hell, don't you? And how do you figure out that balance between raise some hell, do some stuff, get some scars, learn from them? And also, you said this super early on, and it's Rob's line, which is be a calming force. And you were starting this in our intro, that is something you do in the startup world, but I'm sure you do it at home. So how do you balance the wild at heart of your son and the calming force of I've learned this? And maybe the absolute answer is, Brad, I don't or don't know. That's fine, but those two stories are both in you. You're a calming force. You've got the scars, and you've been a wild at heart, and that got you where you were. How do you peanut butter and chocolate that?
So I think for me, and this is something that long before our son was born, you talk about working agreements. Like, the working agreement that I had with my wife was, we are gonna strive for peace. Like, peace is what's going to be established around us. We're not going to get it every time. We're going to get it wrong more often than we want, but like, we're going for peace. And this is, some people in the audience will appreciate this and some will not. But my faith has been the thing that's like at the center of that peace. And without it, my life would be like pure chaos. Like, I'm certain of it, because my son, a lot of people are like, oh, your son is so well behaved, he's so blah blah blah, and I'm like, you are seeing a snapshot of this child. That is not real. What you see, it's just like when someone says, oh, that kid, he's so bad, you just saw him at his worst at that restaurant when he was upset. Like, you don't know anything about that kid. And I was like, you don't know anything about my son. He has the full capacity to destroy, to like lose it in ways that like would like terrify people. So it's that. And we started out with, like a lot of, you hear people promise you, it's like, this is going to be this way, it's going to be this way, it's going to be that way. And as I said earlier, I reject a lot of that stuff. It's like, I don't want to hear that. I'm gonna find a way, and sometimes I do and sometimes I don't. And one of the things, and I'm kind of like jumping to a question that you guys I know are going to ask later, but you know, one of the things that I'm just most proud of is the fact that like we got both of our kids to sleep through the night before they were like a month old.
Wow.
And whoa. And you know, yeah, and we, you know, we got this book, it's called Moms on Call. You know, I highly recommend it. I mean, a lot of it's like such common sense stuff, like make the baby sleep in its own room, you know, white noise, like things that like a lot of moms don't want to hear. Like they don't want to hear, like, you can't be constantly checking on the baby. If the baby's crying, they want to go in. So it's a lot of like common sense things that like, I think dads kind of intuitively feel, but like feel like they're overridden because, you know, mother knows best, even sure. though it's like, you know, maybe not in some cases, maybe, but
have,
like,
we have some wisdom too, even if we're mostly dum-dums.
Yeah. Yeah. We're
trying.
It's a team sport, parenting. I definitely feel for people who are doing it on their own. I can't imagine. So in the book, the authors promise that you'll be able to get your child to sleep in 3 months, 4 months tops, like sleep through the night. And I looked at my wife and I was like, we're gonna do this in a month. Like, we are doing this in a month. I can't live with this kid waking me up every 45 minutes. There's no way. Because that's what he was doing.
Yep.
He came out and it was like every 45 minutes. I don't know how I can live like that. So I was like, we're gonna
need machine.
What's that?
Need machine. He was a machine who only needed. And you don't necessarily know what it is. You just know you didn't give it to him.
Yeah. 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 And so I started basically collecting praise and worship songs, essentially, and just making a playlist, like songs that had a message. Like, I love listening to the lyrics of any song that I'm listening to. I'm listening to all the lyrics. And if I hear dumb lyrics or things that like really sad lyrics, I'm not going to listen to sad songs. It's just because it's like poisoning your mind. So I'm looking for, I was looking for songs of like victory, but like on a spiritual, you know, spiritual aspect. And I just collected them and then I'd play them. And then when it's like bedtime, he's going nuts. It's insane. And I'm just like, you know what? I'm going to be here as long as possible. And eventually, like it started working, and I started like learning things. It was kind of like, you know, you're iterating, and you're like, okay, that was that happened here. What about this? Let's try this. And you know, the funny thing about it is, with Wilhelmina, my daughter, like, she slept from the beginning. Like it was, and so it was one of those things where I was like, what was the learning there? There is something about, so it's like saying I want peace and then actually establishing a place where there is peace is a whole different thing. And what I realized was the peace that's necessary has to be in me. Like, it's like this child, and I'm sure you guys have seen it, like your energy, the way you are, if you're in a bad place, like that stuff, like it infects them. If you're in a great place, it infects them. And it's, yes. And it's a weird thing, but like, it's kind of like those, what is it where, oh man, like with quantum physics, where they can manipulate like, atoms, like miles away, like there is a connection,
between
like you and your kid, and I don't think that, I think we instinctively know it, but I don't think we think about like the import of that.
I just want to throw one word in there, which is when I do leadership training, the first and really the only thing that matters for starting on the process is observation skills. And you said earlier, Otis, that you were an observer, right? And look at all these stories, right, from high school, and you're observing the process of kids being in high school, and you're like, beeline, I'm getting out of the way on that. And I'm sure in football, and I don't know anything about football because I'm Canadian, and then you are now applying what has made you successful in life, including the internal side of it, to being an observer of your children and the system of your family. And that, to me, that's what I heard you say. And I try to apply that. And the other thing you said a minute ago is like, we strive for peace and we fail at it. And I thought you were going to say we fail at it more than we don't. You didn't. You were very clever with your words, attorney man. You said we fail at it more than we wish we did. And I went, oh, that was such better words. Anyway, I just really want to say to you that like that the observation skills for me, giving Theo what he needs at the time. And that's an act of service. It's an act of discipline. It's an act of leadership, but none of that comes when I ain't set, when I'm on tilt, when Instagram is calling me, you know, when I, you know, it's a, hey, there's another glass of wine just right there available. I cannot provide for him my best in whatever this craziness that we just talked about is, if I ain't set. And I will take that away from this a lot too.
Yeah. I think that's right. And I, you know, one thing I want to add is, we talked earlier, I'm not sure if this is actually on the recording, but you know, I've got all this podcasting equipment, right? And I started a podcast called Parent Like an Athlete, and I haven't really done much with it in a while, because after Wilhelmina's birth, like, it's just been different as far as my time. But you know, one of the things that when I think about being a parent, it kind of, at least for me, it feels like, I tell people, it's like being a college athlete. You know, you've got two jobs. You've got a college athlete, you've got to go to class, and then you also essentially are a full-time athlete, and you're expected to do well with both jobs. The school thing, you do it because you have to, and the football thing or whatever your sport is, you do it because you love it and you want to, but the sport that you play is the thing that like beats you up, bloodies you up, that like makes you miserable, like a lot, like a whole lot. And, but then at the same time, it's like, well, I couldn't see myself wanting to do anything else. And so with that part, it's like, yeah, it feels like playing a sport and then having this responsibility of like working a job. But then, you know, I think that what you mentioned about the wine, right? Like the next glass of wine or whatever, there are these moments where you know that there's something that you need to do, where you have to set yourself aside and serve others. Sure. And you don't want to. And it's like, if you don't do the thing you need to do, things are going to fall apart. It might not fall apart right now. It might be 10 years from now. Yeah. You don't really know, but deep down inside, you know that you need to do this thing. And it's kind of fascinating, because if you're looking at social media, which I imagine like this might be part of the reason why you guys started this podcast, because you're looking around and you're seeing a bunch of garbage.
Yeah, it's just scrolling through Instagram saying like, I don't know if any of these people have any idea what they're talking about. We don't know what we're talking about, but we're trying to just ask some good questions.
Yeah.
For the record, I get Instagram, Instapot, and Instacart confused, but I'm generally in the same category as you guys.
TikTok and Tic-Tac-Toe? Yeah.
Go on. Yes. Notice. Yes. No, sorry. That's a prelude. Keep talking, please.
Sure. Yeah. No. So it's, so there's all this stuff where people say things like, you know, it's okay if you're this, and like, and give yourself grace for that. And you know, like, it's like, man, you know, it's different when you're on a football team or a basketball team. If your teammate shows up and they clearly didn't watch film, or they don't know the play, or they're slacking off, you know, you give them grace in the sense of like, you're not going to curse them out, but you're going to say, hey, man, like, if you don't know the play and you ask me what the play is, I'm going to tell you the play, And then I'm going to say afterwards, don't let that happen again. All right. Like, do not let that happen again. We can't afford to have you or anyone else on the field not knowing to play. And it's this weird thing with parenting where everyone is kind of just like, well, this is hard. So, if you suck at it, just it's okay.
Or it's
And it's like,
opaque, right? Because on the field, you've got your teammates, you've got practice, you've got hours and hours, and then you've got the game and it's being videoed. And here it's opaque. The ways that I screw up as a father are only understood by Sarah Beth and me. And we're not always going to call each other out on the ways I screw up as a dad. She doesn't screw up as a mom. She doesn't know how. She's incapable of screwing up. But that's the other funny thing is this is a private game, and that's really interesting, because right when you talked about the juxtaposition between school and athletics, they're both highly visible. I got a grade. I was on a team project. I was in practice. Here's the scoreboard. And this one
Well,
doesn't have that, but it's in some ways so much more important. And we got nothing on that. And a couple of weeks ago, Rob and I were just batting the ball back and forth. And I had this idea of for like startups, you have a board and you can have a crappy board, which just, shows up and does nothing, or like a board who actually directs you. We're like, how do we get dad boards to exist? Like, hey, Otis, okay, so here's your accountability scores. Here's what we looked at. Here's the places to improve on. You dogged it on this one. Hey, by the way, can you start teaching a class on this one that you crush it on? That would be amazing. And I don't have any actual intention on doing this. I just the absence of anything that can help me be a better dad or hold me accountable to it, because I can hide from it in a second if I want. I click no on the recording in this. No one else sees what I do as a dad. Ah.
I will say, I think it's, I'm gonna push, but I like what you said. I mean, the idea that it's this is more of a private sport, I like it, but I'm gonna push back a little bit, because when you're playing sports, like I have a, like you play a game, right? And after the game, someone comes up to you and they're like, oh yeah, great game. You did great. And it's like, I know, and my coaches know that I had like three blown assignments. I had like two loafs. It's on tape. Like they're gonna see it. And the thing is, and the thing is, it's like those metrics, those internal metrics of like, are we doing like the best that we can be doing? For our team, those internal metrics are not seen by the public, but eventually the public sees the results of how you approach those metrics. And it's the same with your kids. Like they're gonna see, it's gonna show up.
I agree, actually, Otis, and I think that that's one of the things I'm trying to be so intentional about is like the public will see my child, and they will know if my child's a little shit or if it's an awesome kid or somewhere in between. And I think that there's so much, I think, Brad, maybe where you were getting to is there's so much emotion around parenting, and it's a private act. Parenting is, but it produces a public result, which is a child who has to go live in the world. And I think we're all grappling with the fact that it's hard to get feedback and it's hard to give honest feedback to other parents, even if they ask for it, because it's so emotional, because it's your child. And maybe that's a little bit what we're trying to peel back here is how do we actually tell people a little bit bluntly what we think they should do and then let them take it. But even then, I feel a little weird even saying that, right? Because it's so personal.
I've learned that, I mean, I'm sure you guys have learned this too. No one want, and this is this it's the funny thing is, this is really not exclusive to parenting, right? Like when you think about working with startups, how many founders, like Brad, you're like, I can help you guys. Here's who I've helped. Here's how I helped them. How many founders said no to your offer to help them, right? Like
30%.
how You said 30%. Well, that's a lot better than parents. I mean, so there's a lot more smart founders out there
Yeah.
that know they don't. There's a lot that they don't know, but there are a lot of people who I think just, they feel like there's this inability to like grasp this idea that I can change. I don't have to keep going this route. If I make a decision to go down a certain path, it's okay if it turns out that's the wrong path. There's no shame in that. No one's gonna remember that I said I was gonna do this over here. Like, unless we're talking about me saying I would never live in the country and then I did. But like the thing is, there's no shame in saying I was wrong. But a lot of people don't like being wrong. And even I'm sure you've been in arguments with people who are like, you can never you never admit that you're wrong. And even if you do admit you're wrong, people say that you don't, because deep down the person that's saying that doesn't want to ever admit that they're wrong. So I think there's a and then you and you heighten it with like the kid and what does it say about you as a parent? And it just gets like really, really out of control. I don't know how to help people. I mean, even when I think about this whole parent like an athlete thing, I know I had a conversation with a guy in a casino in South Florida when I was in town for
Great
golf.
start of a story, by the way.
Yeah.
Anytime you want to start a story, I had a conversation with a guy in a casino in South Florida. Like, that's just, sorry to interrupt.
Talking
Keep
to a
going.
random dude in a casino. This guy, I was just looking for somewhere to eat, and he's there with his wife, and there's this really like nice pizza place, but it was packed. So I went to the bar and stood next to them, and we ended up having like the longest conversation. This guy was a lawyer, his wife the doctor, and we eventually started talking about parenting, and I was talking to him about the podcast, and then he said something. He said, he's like, so what do you he said, so what's the what do you think the market is for that? And I was like, probably pretty low. I was like, I'm gonna be honest, man. I know where you're headed with this. I'm sure it's super low. I think that most people do not want to hear what I have to say about parenting. I've heard people say all kinds of things like, well, what do you know? Your kids are like, first it was like, what do you know? You only have one. And now it's like, oh, what do you know? Your kid's only this age. And what do you know? Blah, blah, blah. And the thing is, it's like, what I'm trying to help people understand when I talk about parent like an athlete, it's like, this has nothing to do with like your kid. It's really about you. Are you managing you? Everyone's like, oh, you should do this with your kid, but how are you managing yourself?
Well, they're acting as though you're selling a self-help novel book, or like there's three steps to being a great parent, and you're not. You're saying like this is a journey, and look, this is the journey we're on too with this podcast, right? Like this is the thing, Rob and I came in early was we never want to come into something as experts outside of the business realm. In the business realm, when we have relevant contextual expertise, we're allowed to bring it. But outside of that, our job is to be the ignorant one and to go out to other ignorant ones and bring their stories to life because of the nuggets of truth, because of the volume of story. And it took us a while to get through that because other people are saying, well, what do you know about it? And it's like, nothing. That's why I'm doing this. And that's how Rob and I, and we have a humbling moment. After we regurgitate every single episode with each other, and we go like, holy crap, did we just do that? Like, where did this come from? Like, we don't even know. And I know Rob's on the wrapping it up part of it. But I just would say, like, from the expertise side, Otis, this is why boards matter, is you can't go to your staff or to other people to get real wisdom. And sometimes you can get it from a board, sometimes a coach, sometimes it's your best friend. But where do you seek real wisdom? Because real wisdom requires perspective on you. How does Brad become better? Otis, unfortunately, you agreed to be friends with me on LinkedIn. I am now going to ask you for wisdom on me for no other reason than I can't have perspective on me and you can, and I give you authority to do that. And that's what we need to do. We can't do this alone. So that's my kind of last rant. Otis, I'll give you a chance to respond, but I know that Rob's into the Let's finish this up.
No, hey, if you ever, I like the humility. I like the, but I will say that, you know, the cool part about there, the people who are willing to say that they don't know a lot, they tend to know a lot more than the people who say they do. So,
That might
so.
be true. And we try very hard to keep on. I think Brad put out an aspiration for us. I sometimes, just like I said earlier, how I sometimes try to help my employees. Sometimes I slip into advice giving on this show, and I really don't want to. I if anyone's listening to me, don't take my advice. Just listen to my musings, and then take from them what you will.
Yeah.
Well, I want to be respectful of your time and our listeners' time. There's plenty more we could talk about. Maybe we'll have you on again. But in the meantime, we have three questions we like to ask everyone to kind of wrap things up. So you talked about this a little bit, but I'll ask it again anyway. Is there one resource that you wish you had earlier in your fatherhood journey that you found that you've really loved? I know you talked about Moms on Call, but anything else that you really love?
Yeah, so one resource that, oh, so I thought about this question before, and now I'm like, which one? Because it's one, you said one, I can't say two.
You can give us two or three. We'll take all the help we can get.
Okay, all right, okay. This thing, living out in the country, I wish I had that. I wish I hadn't been so stupid, you know, trying to force something. Like, kids need to go outside. I don't want to hear, when you talk about advice, like, people will tell you, oh, my kid likes being inside. No, you just conditioned your kid to like being inside. I'm sorry, but like, they need to be outside. And so that was one thing I wish I had. Because even before he could move, it's like, can I just go outside with him and let him just soak in the sun?
Nature is one of the best cures for almost any ill, I find.
And then the other thing, man, we just got this. So is this chair behind me right there? It's this de medical device called ShiftWave. It is changing my life and my wife's life. It's basically like a, and you know, I don't have any stake in the company or anything, but
You should, though.
if there's a way I could get some action there, I'd love it. You know, maybe
That was spoken,
works.
now let it be true.
Maybe, yeah. But it's a, what it is, it's a nervous system training device. So you lay on this thing. It's got like these vibration, these like nodes that vibrate you all throughout the chair, and then you put on a headset and like you know, eye mask, and you're just like in this immersion type situation where, like, perfect example. So I'm wearing Players Health, this gear they gave me when I went to moderate a panel in Orlando. They had like a NIL kind of event, and I moderated the legal part of it. Talked to a bunch of lawyers who know a lot more about legal side of NIL than I do, and it went really well, but it went like almost an hour longer than it should have because of some weird stuff that happened out in the hall. And when it was over, it was just like, you know, when you're kind of over socialized, and I mean, maybe you don't have experienced this, but like when I get like
I feel that a lot for
too
sure.
much stimulus, like you're just,
No,
it's like
can't do it.
everything and everybody everywhere, and you feel it just sucking the life out of you, and like your brain is just like, I'm here, but I'm also like kind of wishing I were somewhere else. And this guy was outside in the hall, and he had this thing doing a demo for it, and everyone's like, you gotta try it. I tried it, and it put me back in this place of complete calm and peace. And it was just like, I feel normal. I feel like I wasn't on stage for an hour, for like almost 2 hours. I feel like I could be here all night and not have to worry about some type of stimulus or, you know, like coffee or you know, alcohol or whatever. So it's been really good. It's been a big thing. So yeah, sorry as a long response, but
no, it was a beautiful response, but it also gave me time to formulate the question, the joke. Do they make it for infants?
Well, you know,
because it would be great. that's it's just a joke. Just throw it.
So out. No. A woman who I forget what her role is on the team, but she was telling my wife, because my wife, I told my wife about it when I was in Orlando, and I was like, well, we got to find a way for you to try it out. And they actually had one at Capital Factory in Austin. So this woman said that she uses it with her baby. I don't know how old it is, but you know, there's a setting on there for kids like 6 to 9 and like, you know, 9 to whatever. But I've put my son on it. Now he's like at a point where he won't sit still for very long. But apparently this woman said it worked really well with her daughter. So
Well, you ruined my joke by giving me really authentic, good information. And I will never forgive you for that.
Sorry, it might actually work. Yeah. I'll report back. I might put Wilhelmina on it. And she's actually, I call her Chillamina, so it's like she's already super chill. I don't know if I'll be able to get any type of, you know, actionable data, but
you ratchet it down to cool.
Yeah.
Rob, I think you got a couple more.
For sure. So the next one here is on the podcast. Dad here, Dad Brad, and I have in an attempt to stay humble and to make other parents feel better, we talk about our wins and fails for the week, right? So the things that went really well this week, like, you know, I got the baby to sleep through the night, and the fails, like, you know, I had to change him in the bathroom of a restaurant and I got pooped on. And so we want to open that up to you. It can be from this week or it could be kind of a lifetime thing, right? What's like a dad win you've had that you're really proud of and, you know, make us all feel better. Tell us about a time you failed as a dad.
All right. Let's see. I'll start with the fail. Oops. I mean, I'll start with the fail.
We all got it.
It was literally like yesterday, I think. Or no. Yeah.
Perfect.
Wednesday. Yeah. So Wednesday, massive fail. My son loves to eat, which is great. So I know a lot of parents, like, it's like a sore spot. Their kid won't eat, you know, whatever. Don't worry about it. But he loves eating and he constantly eats. And it makes me feel great. But when we had to drive into town or into the city. So Wilhelmina had her 4-month checkup. And so we had to go to Dripping Springs, which is like 20 minutes away for that appointment. And then my wife's iPhone, the camera wasn't working. So she had to go to the Apple store to get that fixed. So that's like in Austin, 45 minutes away from where we are. So on the road to the doctor's office, my son starts to like kind of whine, and then he starts making these sounds like he's gonna puke, and I'm just like, oh no, like he gets car sick, like he gets car sick. So I'm like,
sure.
And I was driving these back roads, like, you know, I'm like, yeah, like not even thinking that this might be making him sick. And so he's like, bleh, bleh. And I was like, did he just puke? And my wife's like, no, he didn't. And I'm like, oh, great. Okay, so I'm good. We got to where we're going. After we leave the doctor's office, I'm going to go to HEB, which is the grocery store in Texas. And I'm going to get this Imitrol or whatever. It's like some liquid to help him like settle his stomach. I get the stuff and he does exactly what he always does whenever I try to put some type of medicine in his mouth. He's like acting like I'm trying to murder him. And the parking lot, he's like, it's like, okay. So I'm like, I've got this thing like in here, and I'm like holding his mouth up, and he's managed to spit some of it out on me, and I'm like, oh, okay, we just have to get more now. So I get it in him, and then we drive to the mall, and it was great. We're at the mall. Like, we got there without any puke. It was perfect. And then at some point, my wife's like, do you want to grab lunch? And I was like, I am hungry. I haven't had any breakfast. I haven't had anything to eat today.
Sure.
But like, I'm thinking to myself, I'm not sure if it's a good idea. I mean, we're probably gonna blow through his nap. Like, I don't like maybe we shouldn't do this. I didn't even consider the car ride with him with a full stomach. So we
Oh no.
the restaurant worked out. Like he was
Okay,
like,
the restaurant worked out.
he was sitting there, you know, he was like, I mean, I can't believe how, I mean, he's usually pretty good, but he was like on another level at this restaurant. He's eating and just hanging out, having a good time, no screaming, no, I didn't have to get up and walk him around. So I mean, this is kind of like a massive win and a fail in the same day. So it's like we leave and then we're driving and we're like halfway home and we're on these back roads and I'm swerving and doing my thing. And then I hear him kind of doing that whining thing and he's like, and I was like, oh no. My wife gets like unbuckles her seat belt. She's in the back. She's got like her jacket and she's using it to catch all his puke. And it was a lot. I
Oh,
mean,
no.
it was like, blah, 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 blah. Like, have y'all seen the South Park movie? Yeah, where he's in the alley and he just pukes. Like, it was like that. And like, I had flashbacks to like another like horrible like moment when we flew to Colorado and we had to drive like an hour from the airport to Estes Park. And it's like, and he threw up like 2 minutes before we got to like our cabin. And you know, I had to clean it. It was like there's actually the first time I had to clean car seat and it was everywhere. But this case, it was, you know, my wife actually caught most of it. But like
In
the
her jacket,
in her jacket.
which I'm
Yeah.
sure was made you popular.
I was so happy when I went to go clean it. 'Cause like I'm, you know, those car seats, that car seat's 50 pounds. She's not gonna take it out and clean it. So I go to clean it. And she's before I went out there, she said, well, I got most of it, so like there shouldn't be too much. And I'm thinking to myself, yeah, right. Like I know what this I heard, I know what I heard, I know what I smelled. Like this is
This sounds like a mom win for your wife. It sounds like she nailed it. She sounds like she
she
crushed
did.
it.
She did. I sent her a text, like I'm like, hey, great job. Like there's not that much here. Like, I mean, it's not that much. Like this is, I didn't have to just like disassemble everything. This is good.
And also, my fault for not learning the lesson earlier this morning.
Yeah, like I like why did I even like I already knew that, but you know,
You're a
so yeah,
brilliant dum-dum, like the
that was
rest
a
of us.
massive fail. And I think it was also like a, and I guess the win, the big win for the week, at least for me, because that was a mom, that was my wife's win. The big win for me was cutting the grass. You know, like there's like 2 acres of grass that needs to be cut, and it was like this high, and I had to cut it. I got this like electric like push mower, and I had to cut it like over 3 days, and just because I don't have time, and I got it done, and it just felt good, you know.
Nice.
Yeah,
It's a good win.
yeah.
As long
All
as a
right, that was
story,
cool.
though.
The
It's a really
simple
good
thing.
feeling, you know, like it's good to laugh at your failure because I'm going to have that one too. But your win, not as long as the story, but really good.
No, the wins
Really
are
good.
the wins are so, I mean, like I think like the biggest, like if you're talking about like a, you know, my favorite win is just getting these kids to sleep through the night, right? But like you don't get like many like giant wins like that, right? It's like everything is just like a little incremental move toward the goal, whatever that is. And it's just like, you know what? Oh, tonight, like or in this day, he pooped like a lot. If he poops a lot, he's in a better mood when it comes
He's
time
having
for
a
bed.
good time.
He's ready to go to sleep. Like I used to, like, here's a little hack. Like, you know, talk about, like, I know we're not supposed to give advice. Well, a lot of people don't want it, but here's some advice. There's this thing called Wendy. So Frida Baby makes this thing called a Wendy gas passer. It's like a little stick that you put in your kid's butt to help them like get the gas out.
That's
Interesting
new.
thing.
Never heard of this.
So this thing gets the gas out, but also prompts poop.
Poop.
And like it, before the poop is like really solid, it's coming out of the gas passer. Like, I
Feels
mean,
dangerous. Feels like you got to stay out of line of fire on that one.
you gotta keep the diaper up in a certain position. But when I tell you that it opens up, I mean, that's like a like so I like when I was talking about like getting to sleep early, that was a big part of it because, like, I mean, they're just little people. Like, who's going to be able to sleep when their stomach is just like just
Constipated
gas and you
AF.
gotta poop and you can't get it out? Like, what a horrible, I can't imagine that. We're just so used to just going, we go to the bathroom and it's done. But
We
like,
know
if
how to
you
do
could not
things.
do that, it would ruin your sleep. It would ruin everything.
All right, Otis. So for the last question we'd like to ask is, share with us a dad joke to send us home.
Okay. So you might have to edit this.
All right.
Are we doing both
You know what? Do give us both. We know you got one that might not be safe for the podcast, but let's give it a shot. We're early. We don't know what's safe or not yet.
Okay. All right. We're gonna go with I'm gonna start with the not safe for podcast one first.
That's a joke for the dads, not a dad joke. I
Yeah.
love it.
I
For
want to
the
find out how to edit that one for someday. That is
That might
perfect
have to be
for.
like a bonus content for like later on. That's great.
Oh yeah.
Oh
Only joke, only
my
real joke I know. So yeah, so I and then the dad joke, it's from Pulp
God.
Fiction. I'm gonna mess it up, but maybe I won't. So there's a mama tomato, a papa tomato, and a baby tomato walking down the street. And the baby tomato starts to fall behind. And the papa tomato turns around and smashes the baby tomato and says, "Catch up." So yeah, yeah.
I think that's a great one. That's solid.
It's bad. It's
Yeah.
perfectly bad.
It's a horrible joke, but
God.
it's great. It's one of my favorite scenes from Pulp Fiction. Like, yeah, so yeah.
There we go.
Awesome.
Well, Otis, we really appreciate you being here with us.
Yes.
For the people at home, if they want to engage with you, if they want to follow you, where should they go? What should they do?
Oh yeah, find me on LinkedIn. I'm really getting into LinkedIn lately, so that's easy to find me there. Not many Otis Grigsby's out there. And then Instagram, Otis Grigsby 18, super easy to find. So yeah, shoot me a message if you want to tell me about how horrible my advice was. I'm happy to hear it. Or if you're like, "Oh, this is great," let me know.
Well, we're all about the engagement. So yeah, let us know. Send us feedback about Otis. Good and bad, good, the good, the bad, the ugly. We need engagement on here. Well, Otis, we really appreciate it. Thanks for being here. This was
Thank you.
awesome. Take care.
All right. Thanks for having me, y'all.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. We hope you enjoyed Otis. We certainly enjoyed having him on the podcast. I learned a lot, and then we also got to hash out some good ideas. We really would love any feedback anyone has. Of course, you can always like, subscribe, but you can email us too, dadeo at gmail.com. Is it Gmail?
Daddyopodcast@gmail.com.
Daddyopodcast@gmail.com. So
We'll leave it
on
in.
that, leave it in. My imperfections are pretty well known, and now they are public and recorded. Anyway, as always, we finish this up with our dad wins and fails. And Rob teased us before by saying he has his biggest dad fail to date. because I'm not going to put it ever. It's just to date. But Rob, please tell us your wins and fails.
Sure. So I'll start with the win, which is small but important. We flew back from Boston to London a couple days ago, and we got a coveted bassinet seat.
Ooh.
So for anyone who doesn't know, if you request it, it's free, but they'll, if they're available, they'll move you on mostly transatlantic, really long haul flights. They'll move you to a seat against a bulkhead. And what, after you take off, they'll install a little bassinet in the bulkhead that you can put the baby in. So Arthur got a bassinet seat, and we kind of took off, fed him, and then wrapped him up and put him in there, and he fell fast asleep. So he got a lie flat seat. He was like in business class, just having a great time. And the only funny thing I'll say is
infinite drinks. Beware.
No, not drinks for us. We tried to sleep.
No, I meant for Arthur.
For Arthur, yeah. Arthur's just putting it back. We tried to sleep, failed pretty miserably on that, but it was good. The thing to keep in mind, and I won't mention which airline this was, the policy is that if the seatbelt sign on is on, you're supposed to hold the baby. And the seatbelt sign was on for like most of the flight. And we had put him in there. He was asleep. So one time a flight attendant came by and said, hey, we need you to pick him up because the seatbelt sign's on. We need you to hold him. And Laura and I looked at each other and we're like, okay. And then proceeded to ignore that person.
Good work.
We did not, and they never asked us again, and we kept our head down, and the result was we picked him up right before he landed, and he got a full night's sleep. It was perfect. So that was awesome. The fail of the week, this is a bit of a story, but this is the first time I feel like I got like a true dad fail. So Arthur had cradle cap, which is basically like dandruff on steroids, really flaky skin underneath his hair. Kind of gross looking. Not at all harmful, totally fine, but kind of gross. We'd been trying to get it off with just baby shampoo and things like that, and it wasn't working. So this is a joint fail between Laura and I. I had gone out and I came back, and Laura had put Vaseline over his head, which is supposed to kind of moisten up the skin, and then you're supposed to be able to rinse it out. And this was on some very prominent websites. Anyone reads this advice, beware. So basically, Arthur's got a scalp full of petroleum jelly, and it won't come out. And so we do one round of baby shampoo, and it does nothing. And the cradle cap's still in there. So Arthur starts screaming, and we don't know what to do. So eventually, it's like I know a little bit about cutting grease from my days of bike racing, so I'm like, okay, let's get dish soap. So then we get dish soap. And we get that in his hair, which, of course, we're worried about hurting his skin. And that does a little bit. And finally, we look up remedies for getting Vaseline out of your hair, and it's cornstarch. So I get cornstarch out of the thing. And so we've got his head covered in cornstarch and trying to, like, get the oil out of his hair and the grease out of his hair.
No.
So after, like, two rounds of Dawn dish soap, two rounds of cornstarch, and like three rounds of baby shampoo, plus a round of adult shampoo and adult conditioner, because we had destroyed his hair.
Rob.
You know, three times in and out of the bath, Arthur screaming the whole time. We finally get like most of, but not all of the Vaseline out of his hair, because he has a lot of hair, by the way. And oh my God, like Laura's crying and like, am I a horrible mother? I'm like trying desperately to like have control of the situation and failing miserably. Arthur is just screaming his head off because he's not the biggest fan of baths anyway, so it's just all over the place. And so the irony of all ironies is we did actually get all the cradle cap off. Like there's no more. We basically scalped him and he looks great now, but it was so traumatic and so terrible. And like, we did not think it through. It was so bad. So beware of the Vaseline remedy for cradle cap. It was definitely one of those moments where I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to remember this forever. And I feel like such a bad parent. And this is so stupid for a non-essential like process. But anyway, he survived it. And Laura and I survived it as a couple, but oh man, super traumatic. It's exactly what I envisioned when I thought of this segment of Dad Wins and Fails. Like, this is what I'm talking about. Like, just the totally whiffed that we'll never make that mistake again. So that's what I've got. I hate to throw it to you, Brad, to make you follow it, but those are my wins and fails for the week. How about you?
Oh, those are pretty insane and excellent. And what I love is it just reminds me of my ultimate win and fail, where I gave him the cauliflower that I'd actually put spicy stuff on. Gave him the broccoli, yeah. It was fine. Then the cauliflower, it's not. And it's kind of like you're running around like, I have to solve this now, and it's my fault, and try to make it better.
And everyone's panicking and no one's happy. It's very tough.
You know, we talked a lot on this podcast about being a calming force as a father. How did you do?
I did decently. I definitely had to stop, get it together, go grab that thing because we got to do it. But it wasn't like calm. It was like trying to take control of otherwise complete chaos.
Well, my wins and fails are not that good, but they are, I think, good. So again, Theo was had his first cold and was cutting teeth. And so we're not pulling all of our thoughts together. But one of his favorite sneaky things to do is he knows where the dog water bowl is and he wants to go splash in it. So we're constantly picking the dog water bowl up, because if we don't pay attention, little Jack will disappear through the wall, appear on the other side and start splashing it. And then that requires a full change and all this stuff. Well, the other day we were so fried and everything, we picked up the dog water bowl and I looked at it and I came downstairs at 11 at night and it was still up. The dog had not had water in 24 hours. And so is a dad fail. And he's just looking at me and it's right where his food is and he's food oriented. So he's like always looking at the food bowl to see if anything magically showed up there. So that's what I thought he was doing. And I just nowhere in my mind did it register. I have dropped this duty. And I have a whole framework about capacities versus duties, but our capacity was dropped and this duty just fell right off the back of my head. So I promised Cody, our original listener, that I would say that is one of my dad fails. Second dad fail is when baby was sick, I didn't want to leave the bed because I wanted to be of service. I know you're tired and all this other stuff. And Theo, still co-sleeps with us. And for two nights, I got almost zero sleep. For the sole egotistical reason of, I don't want to leave this bed in case I could be of service. Whereas the smarter play, and Sarah Beth made me do it the night 3 and 4, and she was right, is to have one parent at least functional the next day. And that mom's going to take this hit. Don't have dad take the ricochet, have dad go downstairs. So that was my ego got in the way. And that's fine. Some wins though. So this podcast, Arm Boom, that's a huge win. And the reason that's a huge win is because Sarah Love Beth it. Is encouraging us to continue to do this podcast. And that's great. Another huge win is that we're hearing a lot from not dads, moms that we know, including my own mother, and people who don't have kids yet, or people who are uncles, that our listener group we thought was always going to be dad and high functioning CEOs. And it turns out it's broader than that. And so that's been really wonderful. And then the last thing that's a win fail, we went and did something called a hut trip. So there's these 10th Mountain huts that you can rent out for one, two or three nights in Colorado. And it was a really, so we decided to go and we went with five friends and four other people. And Sarah Beth took Theo, so he's 20 pounds. Her rig or stuff was about 6. So she's got 26 pounds humping up at 10,000 feet. And that was pretty tough on her. And then I have the burden of my stuff, her stuff, food, and baby stuff. And so my pack was considerably heavier and it was considerably higher. So the effort of getting up there was a lot more. We miscalculated that burden, but we got to go up there. And of the people up there, Sarah Beth's the only one who'd ever been on a hut trip before. I was the oldest at 43 years old and took me 43 years to do a hut trip. But Theodore did his first hut trip at 9 months old. So that's a big, I love it. It's a big win. He loves being outdoors. And with a small community like that, he really gets used to people pretty quick. And he was just super happy to be with everyone. And we did great with all those pieces. But the thing that I learned, and this was the fail, we had to completely rely on our friends for all the chop wood, carry water, including chopping wood, melting snow, cooking and cleaning. And as a person, as a guy, I have never been in the position where I'm not usually the leader, or if not the leader, the number one helper. And in this particular case, my duties in parenting were full send. That's all I was able to do until mom and baby went to bed was I helped with Theo and I helped with Sarah Beth altitude sickness and I helped and watching everyone else do chores while you can't do chores because you're doing baby. That was a tough moment. I mentioned it to my father and he says, yep, get used to it. So those are my wins and fails and updates. But yeah, things are good in the Bickerton household.
Really appreciate it, Brad. Thanks for that vulnerability as well. That's awesome. Well, everyone, thanks for sticking with us this long. This, I believe, will be our longest episode ever, at least longest episode so far. If you've made it this far, we really appreciate you. You're the true listeners. Please like, subscribe, and share this with your friends. We're starting to build a little bit of a following here. We want to keep it going. We're on YouTube as well as anywhere you get your podcasts. And as always, if you've got guest suggestions, ideas for the show, feedback, we really would love and need to hear it. You can email us at daddyopodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Bye-bye.